Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Hey everyone, welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm Sean Duffy, along with my co-host for the podcast. She's also my partner in life. She's also my wife, Rachel Campos Duffy.
Sean, it's Q&A. It's Friday.
Friday. I love it.
It's our highest rated show. People love Q&A and they have sent in some great questions. One of the questions, Sean, is related to what happened last weekend on Fox and Friends. So people wanted more information because it looked like there was a little bit of, I don't even say friendly tension on the couch where we were debating about phones. So we had this psychologist on. He's actually a professor of ethical leadership, I should say, at NYU. His name is Jonathan Haidt. And he has basically advised that children should not have a phone before the age of 16. And he looked at mental health rates that he can literally, and we've seen this before, we've covered this in other shows, where you just put the graph of children's mental health, and then when phones were introduced, and suddenly mental health totally drops. He says that in 2010, play-based childhood ended, and phone-based childhood began. Just think about that. Play-based childhood ended in 2010, and it was replaced by a phone-based childhood. He basically says that what we've experienced, even in the span of when we've had kids, is a complete rewiring of childhood away from play and towards phones and devices. And so this is this moment that we're in, where so many parents like you and I, like Pete, like Will, we grew up playing outside, riding our bikes,
kids in the neighborhood, making up games, playing totally with each other. And again, you start the day having no idea what you're going to do and who you're going to play with and what games you're going to play.
You couldn't even coordinate, by the way. You just kind of had this general meetup place where everybody kind of sort of met up there or at someone's house. And so anyway, this has changed childhood in a lot of ways. And so the debate became like, you know, no phone. So we have a daughter who only has a flip phone, which is what this professor was recommending. And then Pete has also removed phones from his kids and devices. And Will has also. But Will has a younger child who he said he promised at a certain age, I think when his kid's 15, he was going to let him have a phone. And he says he feels bad, just as we did when we took the phones away or said you couldn't have a phone. Because it is true that your kid is left out. If everybody else has a phone, your kid is kind of left out of the social loop because they're not even like texting. So even if you give your kid a flip phone so they can text, hey, what's going on tonight? Or where's that party? Or where's everybody going out to eat or whatever? They're not doing that. They're doing it by apps. They're snapping each other about where they're going and what they're doing. And so he feels, Will was talking about that feeling of not feeling like your kid can socially keep up and fit in with everybody else because everybody else is on it. Now, Pete and I said, well, one of the ways to get around this, and the professor also mentioned that, was saying, okay, I know, you know, 6-7 families that share our values. Let's all get together and come up with a plan. And if all of these kids don't have phone. It's just easier to not be that kid who doesn't have a phone when you can go, well, my parents are crazy, but so are all these other kids. You know, parents are crazy. So that was one. But then the conversation actually went to a different level where we talked about how we all felt that concern when we took phones away about our kid can't fit in. And then it was sort of like, well, wait a minute, maybe teaching our kids to be okay not fitting in is actually the right skill set to build them with or fortify them with in this crazy ass environment that we live in, culturally speaking.
Right. So I think one, every kid is different. So we have nine. None of them are the same. They
came
from the same family, same genetics, but they're really different. And some kids, I think, can handle it more than others.
Handle the phone better.
Handle the social pressure and being an outcast. And I thought the debate was fascinating. I actually loved it because I think so many, if you have kids and you're not struggling with this, you're not thinking the right way about it.
You're not thinking deeply enough about parenting.
You should struggle with the idea of phones. And we said this before, but Rachel and I got this wrong. We gave our older kids phones earlier. The blessing of a lot of kids
because we didn't know any better. We thought, they need to get a hold of us if they're, you know, at practice or whatever.
And what's happened is, by the way, phones were tamer. They might all text each other, you know, when the older ones had phones. Now they're all on social media.
Yeah, there's apps.
So it's changed how this has worked. I look at this and go, I do think it's really great that your child can learn how to go against the culture, to go against the grain, to be able to push back and develop other skill sets. If you're not on social media, navigating with other kids in your class, you're going to develop other skill sets on how you socialize.
Yes.
And navigate that social structure. So I think that's one really positive thing. We have a family computer, right? And I think the danger is not so much that they're communicating with their classmates. It's that with the phone, they never put it down. They wake up with it. They're at school with it. They go to bed with it. And I think that's the trouble mentally.
Yeah.
If you have a family computer and they're like, I got to check out Snapchat to see where everyone's going tonight. That's okay. That's fine. Then you go back to your flip phone. Then you could navigate it, but you actually have to think through.
Yeah, because the phone becomes like an appendage, right? It becomes like a third arm on, you know, another hand on it.
Their only arm. That's all they do.
And so that's a problem. It's really important for people to understand the people who design these phones and design these apps, design them intentionally to make them addictive, to make them make it very hard for you to keep your attention away from them. And that's what TikTok does. That's what Twitter does. I know as an adult, I have, like, once I get going on Twitter or Insta, it's really hard to put it down. It is designed for addiction. But let me get back to this other, because I think this is the most fascinating part of the discussion, is I think both you and I grew up having to be against the grain in some regard. And I think it has benefited us as adults. So I want to lay that out. And you can talk about yours. I think yours has to do with the fact that your mom said, we're not going to have a TV in our house.
Yeah.
And you grew up without a TV, which I found amazing. I mean,
crazy.
I will say there are certain events that happened on TV that you, like Tiananmen Square, I don't know if you really, you know, saw it like happening, but let's put that aside. For me, this was my, and I told this to Will. I said, Will, so let me tell you what it was like growing up as Rachel Campos Duffy, the daughter of Peely Duffy, who is an immigrant.
Peely Campos.
Yeah, Peely Campos, sorry. Yeah, she's not married to you.
No.
Peely Campos, my mom. So my mom is an immigrant from Spain. She married my dad, who is Mexican-American. My dad grew up with a lot of, even they grew up in a small little Mexican-American town in the mountains of Arizona. You know, they had prom. They had, you know, football. My dad was in baseball. Like, he was kind of, you know, Americanized in this little Mexican-American town. My mother, of course, was born in Spain. And so all of my high school stuff that happened was extremely foreign to her. Like, what school is about? And also, my mom was homeschooled. So that was another part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that school was social was totally foreign to her. So when she saw, you know, you know, prom and cheerleading and all this stuff. Let me just put it really simply. My mom was super embarrassing to me. Like when growing up, she would show up in her car and she would beep the horn for me to come out. And my friends would be like, your mom's here. I mean, when you're 15, that's super embarrassing. She would, but also she had me on lockdown. She had me on lockdown. Like I was in cheer. She never went to any of my games because she didn't understand like what the point of that was, but she'd show up to pick me up. And when all the other kids would go off to party, I had to go home. And so my social life was, yeah, I could do school activities, even if they were after hours, but then I had to be home. And so my social life became school. Like I did well in school, but I had to get all my social stuff out there. And what it did is I feel like my mom gave me a superpower. Like I always felt a little bit different than the other kids. And I had to adapt to that and learn to be okay with that and know that there were things that I was allowed to, that other kids were allowed to do that I just didn't even think about asking to do. And I think that that feeling of being a little bit different is why, you know, when the whole world got vaccinated and I knew in my body and you knew for yourself, Sean, I knew internally, I'm like, this is not right for me. The way we're getting pressured. I already had COVID. I have natural immunity. When did natural immunity go away? What's all this propaganda going on? And I was okay being treated like a leper. And I was treated like a leper by a lot of vaccinated people. And I got a lot of criticism for not vaccinating my children. And I was okay with that. I'm not judging people who fell into it because I think this was the greatest psyop of the 21st century. I mean, like this was like enormous, but I feel like my strength was that what my mom gave me, which was learning to be okay but going, you know, against
if,
the grain.
If I was your parent and I did that to my child, which seems to be, you know,
embarrassing. You mean what my mom did
and
to
restrictive.
Me?
My fear is that when I send you off to college, you are going to go hog wild.
I did a little bit.
Right?
I did a little bit, but I came back.
You came back.
She did a lot of rosaries for me in my early 20s.
Those rosaries were. I didn't have a TV growing up in my house. And I think when I was a senior in high school, my parents got a TV. I mean, I don't think I watched The Wall Come Down. I didn't see
the Berlin Wall.
Yeah. I missed a lot of things because we didn't
You'd
have
sneak
one.
Over to your aunt's house to watch some things like Dukes of Hazzard or something.
Probably Dukes of Hazzard or Scooby-Doo when I was little. But
did that make you feel different in the way that I kind of felt different?
Well, so there was a time when Cheers was on, like all this, like people would watch and talk about TV
like you
shows.
Weren't as in with the culture.
I was not culturally astute. Now that was not as big of an issue of, I went out at night, I saw my friends, we didn't.
Did you watch MTV? Because MTV was such a big deal when we were growing up.
I didn't have a TV, no, I didn't watch MTV until a little bit older.
I was overseas, Sean, and American kids who knew they were gonna get stations, say in Spain or Turkey or, you know, all these places I lived, before they left, they just put a VHS tape in and they'd record like entire days of MTV. And then those kids would come to the base and then everyone would go to their house and pop the VHS tape in with like 24 hours of MTV because we didn't have MTV when we were on the bases. Yeah. There was no satellite or anything.
But coming back to this conversation, we all love our children. And it's really hard when you love them to see them go through the pain of making really tough decisions for them to say, you know what? I don't think it's healthy for you to have a phone. Love is not always easy. And sometimes it's tough love. And to do what's right for them, to make sure that their mind, their attention is not diverted into these apps that consumes them all the time, that prohibits them from developing other skill sets, is really important. And I don't think a lot of people actually want to take that step because they feel like they're mean parents. They're not good parents, but it is our job to protect our kids. And part of that is to look at this phone situation and look at the studies. Mental health for kids has dramatically declined with the introduction of the phone. I want my kid to be healthy. And so I think this pathway to navigate it. And it's interesting. I mean, what I love about your show is the honesty. that takes place that, you know, Will, as he talks about the real struggle with his own son, who, by the way, your kids will beg you, our 15-year-old, I don't think 2 days goes by where I don't have a conversation about when am I going to get a phone? Like, it happens, like, the pressure is real because they want a phone because everyone has phones.
She has a flip phone.
Will is really honest.
But I notice when she's around other girls that do have phones, like, she's borrowing their phones.
Oh, she grabs it and wants to get on it. So, but Will's honesty, I love, because that is a real struggle. And again, you feel like you're doing a disservice to your child, when in actuality, you're giving a great benefit.
Well, and that's what we talk about. First of all, his kid is like Paloma. They're kind of on that verge, you know, where they go from little kid who really cannot handle, you know, the pressures and the addiction to, like, you know, hopefully more mature kid can manage it or accept the rules around it a little bit better. I mean, that's that, they're in that phase. But if you think about, like, Pete's kids are as young as some of our youngest kids, right? Mm-hmm. And what we talked about was, especially at that age, I mean, just listen to what he said. We've moved from a play-based childhood to a tech-based childhood. That is one of the saddest statements I've ever heard. And so maybe you're not taking something away from your child. And this is what we talked about on the show. Maybe you have to stop looking at it as this punitive thing. I'm taking a phone away. Instead, what you're doing is you're opening your child's world up to climbing trees and having a childhood and gifting them a childhood that you had that is being robbed by Mark Zuckerberg and all these Google people and everybody else. They're robbing our kids of childhood. And by the way, Sean, those people, the Silicon Valley,
their kids don't have phones.
Their kids don't have phones because those people know exactly what it does to attention span, to social interactions, and to life.
So, to give you some pushback, just because your child doesn't have a phone, it doesn't transport them back to 1980 where no one else has phones. So even though they can climb trees, there's no one to climb trees with. Because the other kids in the neighborhood are on their phones, live in the tech world. And so it does become this now. But if your kid has enough personal oomph, if you will, they can get those other kids to go, hey, little Danny, little Johnny, let's go play. Let's go build a fort. Let's go. They can try to pull them out and get them involved in their world, as opposed to dragging you into their world. By the way, I talked about a flip phone. I bought my daughter, it's called a Gab phone. And it looks like an iPhone. It doesn't actually flip, but it's a dumb phone. They can't download apps. They can't access the internet, but she can text. It has a really bad camera on it.
Yeah.
And so it looks kind of like an iPhone, but it is nothing like an iPhone. I think the takeaway here is really go through the thought process about what skills do I want my kids to have? And also, what information do I want them to have access to? Because on these iPhones, we all know what information these young kids are getting, and it's not healthy stuff.
No.
And you can't control them all the time. Think about that.
You can't control the feeds. You can't control the videos that they're scrolling through that they're going to have access to. I thought it was interesting. We talked about what our kids do when they don't have their phones. When you take their phones away, we take them away. Also, when we go on vacation, like when we're at the lake house, we take the phones away. And, like, it's so good. Like, the kids will, you know, it's good for the kids to be bored. And, you know, I mentioned how the other day I was looking all over for Patrick and I couldn't find him. And I was like, where is Patrick? Where's Patrick?
He's our 7-year-old, by the way.
Yeah, he's our 7-year-old.
Almost 8.
And they said, oh, he's up in the tree. And I couldn't even see him. He was so high in the tree. And he's just up there by himself. He's climbing trees. And, you know, our daughter and our neighbor's daughter, Savannah, they basically turned a room in my house into their sewing studio. So they have material and they have little, I bought them little, me and Savannah's mom bought them little, like, mannequins, like Barbie mannequins, and they make dresses and they're creative.
And they're really actually well done.
I showed them on TV and so many people texted me and they're like, Margarita and Savannah made that. And I was like, yes, I couldn't believe it. I've been amazed at what they've been able to create. But again, it's the idea of you're not doing something punitive. It's what you're opening them up to, allowing them to be bored, allowing creativity to seep in, allowing them to go and read. I mean, I remember grabbing a book and reading under a tree. I mean, these are the things. And by the way, we have to be modeling that too. And that for me is the hardest part. I struggle with it all the time because I don't have a laptop. I basically read all my articles, get all my news from the phone. So it looks like I'm on the phone a lot because I'm reading stuff for work. But I have to watch that. And it is my...
Okay.
It is totally my... fault, and it's my cross. It's my cross.
Listen,
but we have to model it, and we have to do better.
She's on her phone a lot, and we have to talk about going modeling. And your job is online. Your job is, you know, on Twitter.
But I'm trying harder to carve out time to go. This is the time I'm reading when they're not here. This is the time that when they're home that I am.
This is a good conversation. You need to have this conversation. You need to think through it. There are different answers. There's a range of solutions you can find other than just giving your kid a phone, sending them hog wild with it, and thinking that they're going to be happy. Because they'll be happy when they get it, but the long-term consequence of having that phone is not going to make them happy. And it's your job to think through that for your child.
And every psychologist will tell you the studies
are out.
They're not even ambiguous. In the slightest. They are absolutely, they can see mental health literally drop off as apps are introduced
crystal clear
into the phone.
I thought it was interesting though. I love the conversation on the couch. I thought it was fascinating. I'm glad someone asked us about it because I watched that and I'm like, this is a conversation.
The conversation
that parents are having about their kids and phones, which I love that you guys did.
And we not only did it on air, it went off during the commercial break and then we brought back, you know, and it is the beauty of Fox and Friends weekend where it's a 4-hour show. And you can actually unpack ideas and Will Pete
keep
and I
fights going.
Yeah. Well, Will Pete and I just really want to bring what we talk about in the commercial break onto air.
Yeah.
Some things we can't, but most things, if it's a really great hot conversation, we're going to bring it back. And it is the beauty of that show that we can do that. And you know what? This conversation is as important as any political conversation that we have on the show, without a doubt. Let's take a break here and we'll come back with another question on the other side.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
All right, welcome back to you from the kitchen table. All right, next question, Rachel.
So this question was what I thought about Ilhan Omar's daughter.
What we thought about Ilhan Omar's daughter.
Yeah, what we thought about Ilhan Omar's daughter, Isra Hirsi is her name. Isra Hirsi was among 108 people who were arrested at Columbia University for rioting and protesting that was verging on violent. And so she ended up being arrested on Thursday. She's a student at Barnard College, which is affiliated with Columbia. There were over 100 students, pro-Gaza students, who were arrested. And what I thought about that. Well, my first thought was, bad apple raises bad apple. And I'm not opposed to protesting. And I think there's a lot of there's reasons to be on both sides of this. I think there's I guess for me, I'm more concerned about what happens in America than what happens overseas. I wish we could be energy independent so we wouldn't have to worry so much about what happens in the Middle East. That's a reason I'm mad at Joe Biden. But look, I mean, Ilhan Omar is one of the most ungrateful anti-American members of Congress in the history of Congress. She was caught in a speech not very long ago saying she's looking out for the interests of Somalia. She's basically a Somalia first. So it does not surprise me that her daughter would be part of this whole trend of finding so much anger and to be angry about in terms of this protest. And getting caught in this. And I just wonder if the FBI, Sean, is going to be as concerned about these protesters as they are about the January 6th protesters who were carrying flags and not burning them and so forth.
Maybe some of the FBI agents were actually there protesting with them, not as, you know, agents, but actually as believers in the protest. Let's take a step back, because at the very time that this protest was happening at Columbia University, the president of Columbia was on Capitol Hill saying anti-Semitism is not tolerated on campus, right? And you can say there's a distinction between I want to protest America's
issue.
You can, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's anti-Semitic. And so I want to make sure there's some clarity and differences there. But what's interesting, Rachel, is that, again, I agree with you. I believe that people protesting is an American right. And if you believe in the First Amendment and the freedom of speech, you have to protect not just speech that you like, you have to protect speech that you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key foundation. And we have to do that as conservatives for liberals, and liberals should be doing the same thing for conservatives, but they don't. But what's interesting is there are rules around the First Amendment. You can't just take over the Columbia Quad, the square, and put up tents and not have permission and basically start, you know, chanting and, you know, doing all these things against the policy of the college. You usually file for a permit. They go, okay, you can protest. You can have the square for this amount of time.
And
you can let your voices be heard. They did not do that. So what they did is they actually said, if you don't leave by like 9 o'clock at night, you're going to be suspended. Or they gave them a warning. It was verbal. Then they gave them written warnings to say, if you don't clear the premises, you are going to be suspended. I believe they actually waited till the next morning before they actually said, okay, we're going to suspend you guys. You guys are out of here. And I think this is the backdrop. I think that the protesters were shocked. They were confused. They're like, we can protest. We can take over campus because
we're liberals.
We run the campus. The administrators aren't in charge. We're in charge.
Yeah.
And we say what goes, and that they were suspended, I thought was rich. And that you have now the squad is out there saying that these young kids are being there's retribution for them because they're protesting genocide. No, first of all, to use the word genocide, wildly inappropriate, number one. But number two, they're illegally protesting. You can't just take over buildings and quads and think that you get away with it. But the way they use language and the way the media doesn't call these things out about how the lie of the illegal protest, the warnings that were given. And frankly, by the way, they were suspended. There was a suspension. They should have been ejected from school.
Yeah.
They should be sent
out.
So here's what
Isra Hirsi, Ilhan Omar's daughter, tweeted before she was arrested. She said, those of us in Gaza solidarity encampment will not be intimidated. We will stand resolute until our demands are met. Our demands include divestment from companies complicit in genocide, transparency of Columbia's investments, and full amnesty for all students facing repression. Now, she talks about the students facing repression, Sean. It's interesting. Owens Burgess, Burgess Owens, I should say, he's a GOP representative
from Utah.
He actually said that he felt like the feelings of Jewish students on campus, he felt, were similar to the way Black students felt on campuses in the 50s and the 60s. And he equated it to that. And there are a lot of Jewish students who don't feel safe on campus. Everyone should feel safe on campus. By the way, conservative kids have not felt safe on campus long before Jewish kids have not felt safe on campus. And I think this, again, speaks to the difference in protests. You mentioned warnings that they had. They had like 24-hour warning. Please take down your tents. Please stop doing what you're doing before anything happens.
Vacate the premises.
Vacate the premises. No one in January 6th got those kinds of warnings. We have grandmothers who were praying outside of the Capitol who are now facing 1-2 years in prison. The total difference in the way protesters who are carrying American flags and calling for election integrity are treated versus these people who are fighting for foreign interests. I mean, really, this is a Gaza-Israeli fight. Now they can say, okay, well, we're funding the Israelis. I mean, there's something to be said about that. I'm angry that we're funding, the Ukraine war as well. But essentially, you never see this kind of passion on college campuses for America.
So what I pulled out of this was they're saying we will not be intimidated. Think about that. We will not be intimidated. These are the people who intimidate. These are the ones that are going after Jewish students on campus. These are the ones that are, do you think the squad feels intimidated? They are the intimidators.
Yeah.
But again, like liberals, everything is flipped on its head, right? We're the victims. Though we're attacking everybody around us and demonizing everyone around us, we're the victims who are intimidated as we've taken over the quad and well beyond the warnings that were given to us to vacate the premises. But we're intimidated?
Sean, do you remember?
We will not be intimidated? Such a lie.
Do you remember when
These are the aggressors.
Absolutely. Do you remember when Riley Gaines, I forget what university she went to give a speech, and she was hounded down. She had to lock herself into a room because the trans activists were going to attack her. She was afraid for her life. And she was locked in a room. I mean, so again, this is...
And Riley Gaines was the aggressor. And
right,
the trans activists who chased her down, were going to beat her up and had her locked in a room for a very long time, they were the victims.
Because they say speech is violence, but then their actual actions aren't violent.
Well, prosecutors would agree with that in that community because no one was prosecuted for what happened to Riley Gaines.
No, absolutely not. So, I mean, I think that back to what you said, I'm not surprised Ilhan Omar's daughter feels as empowered as she does to do. Now, I will say the picture of her face when she was getting arrested was like, she looked shocked. Like
that's what I said. They're shocked. We don't get arrested. We don't follow
Ilhan
the
Omar's
rules.
Daughter.
Right. The squad's going to come to my defense and we're going to make a whole ordeal out of this.
Right.
So listen,
I'm all for protests, especially on college campuses. I think there's a long history of that and it's totally fine. But there are rules to be followed and there has to be equality in the way protest is handled. Sean, there has not been another big conservative protest since January 6th because conservatives know that the FBI will hound them. Many of them have been debanked, Sean.
Yeah.
Debanked. Many of them have had their entire careers fall,
I think they're
destroyed because they happened to go protest. People who maybe didn't even go into the Capitol.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Ollie.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Again, you made a good point. This concern, they wouldn't have given warnings, verbal warnings, written warnings, and then extensions of time for any conservative. But this special group of people get to break the rules. And I think you're right. They were shocked that they were actually held to account. They think they get warnings. They think there's rules, but they don't have to follow any of them because they think they're a special class of protester. And again, it was nice. But can I just one last point on this? Why were they held to account? Why were they suspended? Because the administrators actually, I would argue, probably agree with them. They love these protests. They have fomented this ideology on campus. But the problem now is the administrators are stuck because the American people, the media, somewhat are following what's happening on campus.
And donors are not happy.
And donors aren't happy. So now they're like, oh, I guess now there's a spotlight. We have to actually pretend like we care that these protests are happening on campus, because normally we all would have been out there with them protesting, breaking our own rules.
Right.
But because the president was on Capitol Hill at the very time this protest was happening, and there's more media scrutiny and more congressional scrutiny, then they're like, we got at least for this little bit of time, pretend like there's rules on campus and these people have to follow them.
And Sean, again, I want to reiterate, I'm not opposed to protests. I think there are good points made on both sides of this argument. I'm sorry. I think there have been good points made. There have been bad points made by both sides. There have been good points made by both sides. But nobody should feel unsafe on campus. And I do believe that a lot of Jewish students are facing a lot of fear on campus, and I think it's wrong. One last point too, Sean, because these kids are so dumb and haven't really thought through a lot of what they think, they've gone from being like upset about genocide or the killing of innocent life in Palestine to now actually siding with Iran, the mullahs and this Islamist regime that are, by the way, they send out morality police in vans and throw women into these vans who aren't wearing a hijab. So a lot of these protesters that are now taking the side of Iran and saying, you know, Israel should, you know, shouldn't have you know, bombed the embassy in Syria. They're getting involved in a lot of stuff that I don't think they're playing out all the way. But there has been a lack of interest on the part of the left and on the part of feminists to what is going on with Iranian women who have been subjugated and treated so badly in Iran by these mullahs. And so I just think that that's another piece of the puzzle
because
that doesn't,
it's not about
it just,
women,
I scratch my head.
Women's right.
That's right.
Women's sports. It's about Marxism, socialism, communism. This is a political movement. It's not a women's rights movement.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Listen, Rachel, great conversation. For Friday Q&A, we had a couple more questions, but we kind of went a little hog wild with our two here, which
yeah,
was actually
we went long.
Which were fun conversations. We'll bring more of those back next week. By the way, we're taking our kids on spring break, which will be a lot of fun next week. So we're still doing the podcast.
We've got some great stuff next week.
We're loving it. But again, thanks for being with us on our Friday edition of the Kitchen Table Q&A. Thanks for sending your questions. Always, if you want, the best way to do this is direct message Rachel on social media. Not me. I don't check mine as much as Rachel does. But DM her, send us your questions. Maybe we'll answer yours on our Q&A Fridays. Thanks for being with us. Again, if you like our podcast, you can rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can always find us at foxnewspodcast.com. Subscribe. We drop every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Get a notice when we drop. And you are part of the Kitchen Table. Thanks for being with us.
Bye, everybody.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.